Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 30th, 2005. This session is entitled Unholy Ground, Pollution Problems at the Holden Mine, presented by Rick Dunning in the Fireside Room, disc number DUW-2005-03.
Curator of Holden's Museum, and today's program session is about the problems associated with the mine, the kinds of environmental issues that are left to us as a legacy of this mining history. So I'll talk about a little bit about what are the problems and their causes. I'll talk a little bit about what's been done so far, and then a bit about what needs to be done still in the future and what the prospects for that are. So we'll try to cover all of that as quickly as possible. I'm going to work from here because I need to be able to push the mouse button, and my extension cord isn't very long for the mouse. So it's a change from the old slide projectors to this new PowerPoint stuff. Now, we're used to thinking of Holden as a special place, a holy place, a kind of holy ground, if you will. Certainly we're surrounded by beautiful, pristine wilderness, and we have scenes like this all around us, maybe not quite as white this time of year, but still pretty. But in the middle of this pristine wilderness, we have this old mine, and the piles of stuff left behind from the mining operation. And that there are some people for whom this is a bit of an eyesore, kind of a blotch upon this wilderness area. Certainly you can see it from far away, from miles away, when you're hiking down into the valley a little bit. It's visible. It doesn't really fit in with the rest of this wilderness area. Still, other people think of it a bit as a historical landmark and a historical artifact, and think that it adds a bit of character to the place. So you'll get both opinions, certainly. We're more interested in kind of what are some of the problems associated with these old mine leavings. So we're here in the Railroad Creek Valley, and just a map marking the location of the mine and the tailings piles. Now this is the old mine. I'll sit here so I can do some pointing. So this is a photograph from when the mine was operating. So this is Copper Mountain here, and Holden Village down in the lower left-hand corner. And in the lower half, this is the mill building that processed the ore. Just switch over here for a second. So this ore was discovered in 1896 by James Henry Holden. And when he discovered it, he was working right up in this part of the mountain. He found the ore body sticking out up high on the side of Copper Mountain as a ledge of rock. And he tried for many years to sell it, and finally after he died, it was sold to a company that came to be known as Howe Sound Mining Company, and that's the company that built this mill, that built the town, that operated the Holden Mine. So Holden himself really didn't run the mine, but it is still bears his name. And Howe Sound found out that this ore is in a layer of rock that sticks out here, but then goes straight down into the mountainside, almost vertically. An 80-foot wide layer of rock that goes vertically across the front of the mountain. So when they discovered that, instead of starting up here where Holden started and mining downward, their tunnel goes into the mountain right about here, and it goes back into the mountain about half a mile, straight back into the mountainside, until it gets close to the ore body, and then there are vertical shafts that take you up and down to various levels inside the mountain, and little tunnels that go over to the ore body to get access to it. They started mining above the tunnel. They mined all this rock that's above the main tunnel to about 1945, and that was kind of nice because the ore is dropping toward their tunnel. Gravity's working for them. But after 1945, they started going downward below the main tunnel, and it started to get a little more expensive. Now, from top to bottom, the mine is over half a mile. From side to side, the mine is over half a mile wide. And as I say, that ore layer is about 80 feet thick. So they worked on different levels underground. It's a typical underground mine, except that instead of starting from the top and going down, you start in the middle, and then you can go up or down from the middle. Let's switch back here, sorry. So this diagram is okay, but the upper half is a little oversimplified. But essentially, this is the layer that holds the ore. So from the main tunnel, a shaft goes down vertically at about every 150 feet. Tunnels go over to the ore body. They blast the ore out of that layer. They drop it down a chute. It's lifted up to the main tunnel and loaded onto a train. And then it's hauled out of the mine over into the mill building for processing. And in the mill building, again, kind of working with gravity going down the hillside, the ore goes down through a series of crushing machines until ultimately it's ground up into fine powder, literally into fine sand size. So all that hard rock of the mine had to be ground into powder. And then it went into flotation tanks for a chemical separation process in which chemicals, which are engineered for this purpose, would stick to the valuable minerals and make those float to the top. This is a flotation system. So the valuable stuff skims off the top of the tank, and the waste rock stays at the bottom of the tank. What they're doing in the mill is concentrating the ore. Eventually then it's loaded onto trucks to drive down to the lake to be shipped out. They don't purify the ore in this mill building, they just concentrate it. The original ore was only 2% valuable metal and 98% worthless rock. So it was too low a grade just to ship out raw. They had to take that raw ore and make it more concentrated by getting rid of as much of the waste rock as possible. So the concentrate came out the bottom at about 40% valuable mineral instead of 2% valuable mineral. And then it was shipped off to Tacoma, Washington to a smelter for final processing. This mill crushed 2,000 tons of rock a day. The whole mine and the mill ran three shifts a day, 24 hours a day, 6 days a week. So that's kind of what we're left with. This is an aerial photograph showing the situation within the last few years. So again, this is about where the mill building is. Again, you see the town site. So here's the Koinonia building. We're sitting right about the point of the arrow there. So across the creek from us was the mill. The tunnel again is about this position on the mountainside, right about where the arrow is. And the ore would come out across here into the mill for the processing. The rocks either side of the mill, the piles either side, is just waste rock coming out of the tunnels. But the lower piles are the tailings, and that's what's left behind when the good stuff is taken out. That's the waste material. So the tailings came out of the flotation tank as a slurry of water and rock mixed together. And so they could just pipe it down the valley into ponds. They'd build dikes around an area, and then they'd pump the slurry of tailings in behind the dike and let the rock settle out and let the water drain away. And gradually that built up the pile of tailings. And when one pile got too high, they started the next pile down. And then the third pile, they had just begun, but it's lower than the other two. It didn't get built up quite as high. Now these tailings cover about 90 acres of the valley bottom. It's this, again, the stuff that's left over. So visually, you get a sense of how much rock they took out of the mountain, because this is about 60 to 70% of it right here, ground up and sitting on the ground. Now, to be able to do this, they first had to get Railroad Creek out of the way, because Railroad Creek used to just meander across the valley bottom, kind of like it does down here below the tailings piles. This is the natural channel of Railroad Creek. So to get it out of the way, they had to push it over to this side of the valley and lock it in place with some wooden cribbing. So they pushed it out of the way, and then they could use the valley bottom to put their tailings on. So that's the basic process. They're extracting copper, gold, silver, and zinc as their primary products. There's other metal mixed in with this ore. This is a ore deposit known as a sulfide deposit. There's iron ore mixed in, there's lead, there's cadmium, there's some other kinds of things mixed in with it. They're just getting those four metals out. So for most of the time after the mine closed, this is what it looked like. Big orange piles sitting on the ground. You see the wreckage of the old mill structure here. There's some ore bins still in the old mill structure. And the piles were essentially barren, because with these sulfide ores, there is sulfur in the ore, and that makes the material acidic, and that's difficult for plants, most plants, to grow in. Plus, it's relatively dry. They're basically big piles of fine sand, so water moves through them fairly quickly, and there's not much soil moisture for plant roots to make use of. Now, in the springtime, sometimes you get water ponding up on the surface for a little bit. This is just snow melt ponded up. But then that water soaks through the piles and disappears. Essentially, though, up to 1990, they were these barren orange piles. And they're orange because the iron that's still left in the tailings is rusting. The original color of the tailings is black. And if you could dig down a couple of feet below the surface, you'd see that black color still. But the stuff that's closest to the surface is oxidized. Now, one of the biggest problems we had through the years here at Holden was dust. Because once the tailings were dry and the wind started blowing down the valley like it was a little bit last evening, we'd get big orange clouds billowing up off the tailings and blowing over into the village, sometimes blowing into the Narnia play yard sometimes. Certainly they could be irritating to your eyes a little bit. Anybody that had breathing problems, it would be irritating to their lungs. That was the biggest concern, was the air pollution created by the dust blowing off these piles. And for years, the village tried to think of something to do about it. There have been lots of different suggestions, lots of different experiments. One of the popular ones is to maybe just give everybody a plastic bag and have them take a plastic bag with them when they go. Just distribute the tailings all across the Midwest and get rid of them that way. For a while, the village sprinkled their sewage effluent on this first pile, pile one here in the lower left. And that had the advantage of providing moisture and organic matter to that pile, and that helped to get some trees started on the first tailings pile, at least one edge of it. But the health department no longer allows you to spray sewage effluent, so we don't do that anymore. At one point, the village experimented with growing Jerusalem artichokes on the tailings as a way to cover them, but also they were going to take the artichokes and distill them and make a alcohol-based fuel supplement for the vehicles. Unfortunately, the still never worked quite right, and so they weren't able to do much more with that project. But the point is, Holden's had a long history of trying to think about what to do. And there was some concern that as the cribbing starts rotting out here, that Railroad Creek would begin to erode these piles a bit, that the tailings could start to fall in the creek and get washed down into Lake Chelan. some of the original protection is going away. There was also, let me back up, I'm a little ahead of myself, sorry. There was also some concern about pollution, water pollution, getting into Railroad Creek from the tailings. Because you saw the water up there from the spring snowmelt, and as that water soaks through the pile, it comes in contact with the sulfur, so it becomes a little bit acidic. So it's like acid rain leaking into the creek. Plus that acidic water is able to dissolve from some of the metals out of the pile, so you also get heavy metals washing into the creek as well. So there was some concern about water pollution, not just the air pollution. So there are kind of three problems that were the biggest problems: visual pollution, air pollution, and water pollution. There was also some concern about fish habitat and how the aquatic ecosystem was, whether that had been damaged, and a few other concerns that we'll mention. So in 1990 and 1991, the Forest Service initiated a project of covering the tailings with gravel. So this is how they look now. You see a layer of gray gravel covering all the tops of the tailings piles. The purpose of that gravel was to stop the dust from blowing around, stop the air pollution. And it certainly has had that effect. It's been successful in stopping the dust. The gravel came from a gravel pit down near the top of the switchbacks further down the valley. So it took two summers, and for two summers, dump trucks were hauling gravel up and taking it onto the tailings and dumping it there. You'll notice also some patches of green. They also created some islands of topsoil in the vegetation, or in the tailings, and they planted vegetation within the topsoil, hoping that once the vegetation was established, it would spread out across the whole pile, and gradually the tailings would look more like the rest of the surrounding environment. So you would no longer see them from long distances away as you're hiking in the wilderness. It's a way of trying to restore them. So that was the big project. Here you see down on the tailings piles, they also brought in some slash, some branches and tree trunks and things like that to provide organic matter and again help the vegetation get started. It became a Forest Service experiment with different kinds of vegetation. Here you see a patch of grass, so they experimented with what kinds of plants would do best on this kind of environment. And they tried a lot of different combinations. Some they irrigated, some they didn't irrigate, some they fertilized, some they didn't fertilize, just trying to see what would be the best way and the most cost-effective way to get vegetation started here. And it's been relatively successful. Plants are growing in that gravel as well as in the soil islands. There are volunteer species coming in that weren't planted. Lupin and alder and other things are moving into the pile. So it really has begun to revegetate itself, which has been a nice change. They also dug some drainage ditches on the top of the piles to get water off the pile so it wouldn't soak through. They also dug some drainage ditches around the upper side of the pile to divert water coming off the hillside so it wouldn't drain through the tailings. That's how they were trying to deal with the water pollution, is to not let as much water soak through it. They put some riprap along the base of the piles to protect them from erosion. They got some large rocks and dumped them all along the edge here. They also dumped some big rocks in the creek to create some pools for trout habitat. So they were trying to improve the fishery as well. So again, that's kind of how they look today, with the patches of vegetation being where the green shows up the best. There was some concern too about water draining out of the mine. This is the mine tunnel, the mine portal. And the mine seems to be full of water up to the main tunnel. So the lower half of the mine is completely full of water. And so there's concern about water draining out that's polluted and draining on down into Railroad Creek. So to try and address that, they put some blocks of limestone in the stream bed to buffer the acidity of the water and hopefully cause some of the metals to drop out before they got to Railroad Creek. So that's kind of what the Forest Service did. As I say, 1991 was about the time of this project. Price tag was about $5 million to get all this work done up to this point. Some places the tailings are too steep to put gravel on them, so they covered the tailings edges with this cloth, this erosion control cloth. It's kind of ripped up now, but that was a way to try and stop wind erosion on the sides. Here you see more of this riprap. Look how orange the bottom ones are. Those boulders have been there 10 years and they're coated with iron already. And that's iron that's coming from the water out of the tailings. So the question was, once they finished that, was that enough? Did they solve the problem? Certainly there was less dust. Vegetation was starting to get established, so those things were doing pretty well. You see the pools that were created for the trout here in Railroad Creek. But there was still some concern that maybe they hadn't addressed all the problems. So beginning about 95 or 96, the Forest Service initiated another round of environmental testing. Air quality testing, water quality testing, soil testing, lots of different kinds of analyses. And essentially what they found out is that water pollution is still a problem. Everything else they did seems to be okay, but the water pollution is still a problem. There are times during the year when Railroad Creek exceeds state and or federal water pollution guidelines. So times during the year when it violates the pollution standards. Usually that's in the springtime when there's kind of a flush of water down through the mine and through the tailings. That's when the biggest influx of pollution seems to enter the stream. Here you can see some of the places where that polluted water seeps up to the surface just below the tailings. So this discolored soil area here is where that polluted water leaking out of tailings pile one kind of pools up before it flows into Railroad Creek. So it's not hard to pick out some of the problem spots. So again, as I say, another round of testing and analysis. This is more of the chemical so that accumulate on the soil downstream or down valley from the tailings. So a group of scientists and engineers and environmentalists got together to analyze the problem a bit. Here you see the reddish color of the stream bed in Railroad Creek. There's a lot of iron especially that comes out of the tailings dissolved in the water, but then right away turns solid again when it gets into the stream, and it coats the bed of the stream so much that there are places where the stream bed is completely cemented solid by iron that's come out of the tailings. And of course, if insects are living under the rocks, they can't do that anymore. So that too undermines the problem. So here's a fish sampling project. At one point they even had scuba divers in Railroad Creek counting fish. They did some sampling of water quality down in Lake Chelan to see if any of this pollution was getting into the lake. That was certainly a big fear because Lake Chelan is one of the crown jewels of the state of Washington in terms of freshwater lakes. They did some ecology analysis and vegetation analysis to see if the tailings had had any effect on the surrounding ecosystems. And they did analysis of the water coming out of the mine again. And as I say, they found out the water pollution is still an issue from the tailings, but they also found out that water draining out of the mine is as big a pollution source as the water that drains out of the tailings. That tunnel drainage accounts for as much pollution loading on the stream system as the tailings themselves. Again, back inside the mountain, as water filters down through the mine, it's coming in contact with the ore. The ore has been oxidized by the air flowing through it. The oxidation decomposes the minerals. As water then filters down the sides of the tunnels and stuff, it picks up those minerals and dissolves them and carries them out of the tunnel, especially in the springtime. So there was some concern about what's going on in there. They wanted to see inside the mine, to get inside there. But the tunnel had caved in after the mine had been abandoned. Because it's the early part of the tunnel goes through loose glacial sediments. So they hired a mining company from Idaho to reopen the mine about 4 summers ago. And so this is the beginning of the process. This is what a caved-in mine tunnel looks like. Those are the timbers that were on the roof of the tunnel, and you can see that they've just broken and the whole thing has collapsed downward. So getting through that was even harder than digging the original tunnel because you got to get all those mine timbers out of the way as well as dig through it. But they did. They built a new tunnel with steel supports, not just wood supports. Here's one of the bits of mining machinery that they used to extend that tunnel back. Here they're making progress. You still see a lot of debris that's got to get out of there. It took them several months to just get all that tunnel opened up again. And once they did, they found water and slimy mud and railroad ties floating in there. And they had to get all that out of the way. So here's some of that slimy water being drained out. That went into retention ponds and the sediment settled out and then was taken out to a landfill. So it didn't go into Railroad Creek like that. That's just the drainage. They were careful with it. And then they finally tried going into the mine. You can see what it's like slogging through all that slimy mess. These are still the miners in their initial exploration. You can see what it's like when you get out of there. But finally, they were able to clear enough of that out that they could go back in the tunnel. So this is in the main tunnel, looking back over 1,000 feet back at the portal, the main tunnel. It's a very straight shot. These are some of the railroad ties that floated out of there. And now, because they're still draining, there's still water draining out of the mine constantly, they built some new bulkheads, some new dams to hold back the water, so that to get into the mine now, you have to take boats into it. And they've got some boats stored in the mine. You climb into these little boats that you see here, and there's not enough room to row them, so you pull yourself along the side of the tunnel, and you pull yourself about 1,000 feet into the tunnel until the water's shallow enough that you can step out and just walk in it. So it's quite a process to get in there still. But once they had that established, then environmental scientists could go in and study how water moves through the mine, how air moves through the mine, where the pollution comes from most of the time. That's the stuff they were interested in. This is back at the main shaft. The elevator, the original elevator of the mine was in this area. Those signs we see in photos from the old mining days. This was the hoist room where the big winches were that raised and lowered the elevator, and we've seen historical photos that show what this hoist room used to look like. Some of the ceilings crumbled away now, but it's pretty interesting to see all that stuff in there. So here folks are just in the mine doing some sampling, trying to figure out, as I say, where the water is and where it's going and where the pollution comes from. Because the shaft is full of water, they dropped sampling devices down into the vertical shaft to get samples from lower down in the mine. So this is just some of the debris on the rocks. They built a little tube here so water can get out even if the mine were to cave in again. They make sure that the water was still able to drain out of there. There was a bit of a cave-in above the tunnel again, although it didn't collapse inside, but some of the fill material on top of it collapsed. So they had to kind of repair that a little bit. They put in a lot of monitoring wells around the area to monitor groundwater quality, not just surface water quality, but what's the water like underground. They've done some geological sampling to see what the glacial sediments are like here in the valley, how far it is to solid bedrock, and what kind of material they'd be going through if they were trying to get to bedrock. So this is one of the drilling operations for the geological work. They've done more sediment sampling down in Lake Chelan to look for evidence of the sediments there, the mine tailings there. One of the interesting questions they had to deal with is whether bats are using the mine. And so some biologists came in and did a walkthrough to see if there was any evidence of bats. And this is a counter, an infrared counter, so that if bats fly through the beam of light, it counts how many times that beam is broken. So they set up these monitors in there, again, to see if bats were using it. Apparently none are at the moment. But that was a question. They talked for a while about sealing off all the mine tunnels to keep air and water out. But if the bats were using it, they couldn't seal it off. They wanted to make sure the bats still had a chance to use it if they were doing so. So that's kind of where we've gotten to at the present time. And the question becomes, what's next in terms of dealing with these water pollution problems, especially? Again, there's water coming out of the tailings that's polluted, and there's water that's coming out of the mine tunnel that's polluted, and that water drains into Railroad Creek here. There is some pollution coming from these ore dumps higher on the mountainside, older access tunnels up here. There is some pollution coming out of the old mill building. So those are kind of the problem spots. So after all the environmental analysis, the next step was a study of possible remedies, possible solutions. Yeah, question.
Is the polluted water making it to Chelan, or is everything settling out before?
It's mostly settling out, and the volume of pollution relative to the volume of Lake Chelan is so small that it does not even show up in the lake.
So it's mostly a Railroad Creek
issue. Yeah. Now, of course, one of the critical questions in all of this, especially if you're asking what's next, is where's the money going to come from? Who's going to pay for this? Now, the Forest Service got some federal money to pay for the gravel cover. They said that was about $5 million worth of tax money. But once they did that, they got curious about who would be responsible financially for this mess here. And How Sound, the company that mined here, is long gone. They're out of business. They were bought out a long time ago. So it was a fairly complicated process because they were bought out and then bought out again, and then that company was bought out. So it's the assets of How Sound have changed hands many times, and it's not an easy thing to trace all this, especially now that the parent company is in France, controlling a corporation here in the U.S. called Intalco, and that's the company that currently holds the assets that originally came from the House Sound mine. Now, they don't own the mine. The mine is actually owned by Holden Village. The property here on the mountainside is Holden Village private property. We own the mine, we own the mineral rights here, because that's part of what we got when the village was given to the Lutheran Church to make a retreat center. But, and of course you might say, well, that makes Holden Village the responsible party here. They own the mine, the mine's the source of pollution, make Holden Village pay for it. But obviously, a nonprofit organization doesn't have that kind of financial resources. Just the $5 million cleanup the $5 million gravel cover, Holden Village couldn't pay for that, let alone anything else that has to happen here. And the federal government knew that. I mean, that's pretty obvious right away. Now, what makes this possible, this question possible, is some relatively new legislation. Now, in House Sound Mine here, they were governed by the Mining Law of 1872, which governs most of our underground mining here in the U.S., what little there is left. And the Mining Law of 1872 has no provision for cleaning up your mess. Once you're done, you're done. It was a law that was enacted to encourage mining. So they made it as easy as possible for mining companies to operate. So there was, when Howe Sound was operating, they were disposing of the tailings in the way that was required of them. In fact, they were fairly responsible with keeping them out of Railroad Creek. But they didn't have to do anything more than that. What's changed is a piece of legislation called CERCLA in the early 80s, Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act. CERCLA is the piece of legislation that created the Superfund, that pool of money the federal government has to pay for cleanups. Now, this site hasn't used any Superfund money. It's not high enough on the priority list to make use of any of the Superfund money. But the biggest impact of that CERCLA legislation was that it gives the federal government the legislative authority to go after whoever made the mess and make them clean it up. Whether it's an old mine site or a toxic waste dump or any other environmental problem, they now have the authority to come back and say, you messed it up, you pay for the cleanup. And so they could go to Italco, who owns the assets of Howe Sound, say, since you own their assets, you also own their liabilities. You have to pay for the cleanup. Even though Italco had nothing to do with this mine, they don't own any part of this mountain, they didn't do any mining here, they are still the responsible party that was asked to clean up to pay for the cleanup work. And they agreed to do that. They eventually signed a paper without even going to court. They signed a paper admitting that they would pay for all of what's been done so far. They would pay for all the environmental monitoring and testing that was done and all the planning work. And they will pay for whatever cleanup is necessary based on those choices, based on what's decided to do next. So we've got the company already lined up to cover the cost. The question finally is, what's next? What do we have to do to address these problems? And so the study looking at possible alternatives looked at about 8 different alternatives, starting with number 1, which was do nothing, all the way to number 8, which was to pile all the tailings together and cover them and seal them off from the environment forever. So they went from relatively low cost to very high cost. And the government agencies in charge of this had to make up their mind what they thought would be the best remedy to use out of those possible choices. Now there are multiple agencies at work here, so it's a little complicated. We've got the Forest Service, we've got the Environmental Protection Agency, we've got the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, we've got the Washington State Department of Ecology. So whenever you've got multiple bureaucracies going on, it's not easy. Not only do they have to make up their mind what to do, but the mining company has to, Italco has to agree, yeah, we'll pay for that. So Italco is lobbying for one of the lower options that aren't so expensive, which they think will clean up most of the problem. And the agencies want one of the higher options that they think will address even more of the problems. And they're not together yet. They haven't reached that agreement yet. So we don't know exactly what's going to be done next. That hasn't been decided to us. And once the agencies decide, then it's got to go through 60 days of public comment to make sure there aren't any objections from anybody else to what they've decided to do. So I can't tell you what's next exactly. I can show you some possibilities. Because of the pollution coming out of the mine, Almost certainly there will be some kind of water treatment facility down here in the lower part of the valley. Some water treatment plant to get rid of the pollution before it gets into Railroad Creek. That's almost absolutely a guarantee. Remember, that's half of the pollution right there coming out of the mine tunnel. So they would run it through a water treatment plant. It might be like a typical municipal water treatment plant like you'd see for a small town, or they may try something more innovative. There's been some talk of a passive system where the polluted water goes through artificial wetlands and the metals settle out in those artificial wetlands and the vegetation helps to take some of the metals out. And that seems to be the direction they're leaning, but it's a little hard to tell. There's pollution coming from these ore dumps higher up that then seeps out of the ground about here. So they may try and capture this seepage here and send it over the treatment plant. There's some pollution in the old mine building from the ore bins there, so they may dismantle part of the old mill to get the ore out of the bins that are up there. So those are the things that are probable. This dark blue line represents a wall over the upper part of the tailings, uphill from the tailings, and the purpose of the wall is to divert water again around the piles, to keep water out of the piles so it doesn't get polluted in the first place. So that's almost certainly going to be in there. Where they don't agree is what to do about the tailings. The agencies would like a wall between the tailings and Railroad Creek. That's what the light green line is here, this lime green. They want a wall there to block the water from getting into Railroad Creek that comes out of the tailings. And they want to collect that water and put it through another treatment facility. That'd be a second water treatment facility for the tailings water. Now, originally, they wanted that wall to go down to bedrock. So absolutely all water would be blocked away. But bedrock is 80 feet deep there. Imagine digging a trench 80 feet deep and then trying to construct a wall in that trench. To do that, they'd also probably have to move Railroad Creek a little farther, a little closer to the village to get it out of the way so they could construct that wall. Now they seem to be leaning toward a wall that doesn't go as deep, that would get most of the water, but not necessarily all of it. The mining company, of course, says, we don't need that. That's too expensive. If we deal with the pollution coming out of the portal, that should be enough to make sure that the water doesn't exceed the pollution guidelines. There's still going to be pollution coming out of the tailings, but it won't be so much that it would exceed the federal and state pollution guidelines. And the agencies say, no, we don't think so. And Intalco says, yes, we do think so. And this is enough, and this isn't enough. And that's where they're not agreeing, is this part of the problem area. To put that wall along the base of the tailings just about doubles the price tag of the cleanup. All the stuff over here is probably in the range of $35 million, at least the current estimates. Add that green wall in there and you're talking something over $70 million probably. So you can see why Intalco is sort of hesitating a little bit on that one. They prefer to save their $35 million for other things, like their stockholders. But that's why they don't agree at the moment, because they haven't reached the point where they figured out what to do about the tailings. This is Norm Day. He's with the Forest Service. He's the Forest Service person in charge of this cleanup, and most of these images have come courtesy of Norm. Former Holden volunteer who now works for the Forest Service. So he's been looking out for us pretty good. And Holden will be part of the criteria for ultimately deciding which option is making sure Holden still continues, still exists. So that is a priority with the Forest Service and with the other agencies involved, that Holden would not suffer too much damage from the process. So that's kind of where we're at. As quick a rundown as I could give you. Any questions come to mind at this point? Steve.
A quick question. You talked about sort of the $5 million temporary option with the gravel and,
yeah,
and planting vegetation. I mean, it seems like, you know, the ideal would be that that vegetation, after dying and decaying, would provide more organic material and provide sort of a bed for the vegetation,
right,
to spread. That's how it's,
yep,
it seems like the work of 50, 60, 100 years to spread out over the whole pile. Is that sort of the ideal someday, that,
yeah,
someday the entire pilings will be covered?
It would be all vegetated.
But
exactly right.
Do they have an estimate how long that would take?
It probably is in that range. It's certainly decades.
Okay.
But they've been very encouraged with how well it got started within the first decade. That they have kind of proven to themselves that, yes, they can get vegetation started there. And so that has been encouraging.
Good. All right.
If things keep leaching, will it eventually take care of itself over thousands of years? Or what kind of time?
Probably not even that long. It would reach a point where it wasn't really a pollution problem anymore.
Right.
But also, it would reach a point where more and more of the tailings were eroded out. And as the upper part that's oxidized has sort of been already leached, but if it starts to be eroded and exposes some of the unleached tailings below that, that'll keep the process going. So it's likely they'd be eroded away before all the pollution was eliminated, if they were allowed just to kind of sit there undisturbed.
You said that they have some agreement on the cleanup. Are they going to start with those parts and then figure out the rest later, or are they waiting for a full agreement?
No, they're going to wait for a full agreement, probably. And there's another part of this. The company also has to pay a kind of a fee for general environmental damage to kind of compensate for how much damage has been done to the environment and the ecosystem. And they can't really repair all that damage over the decades. So that money then goes to fund other environmental projects around the state. And so they have to create a pool of money that then goes to that sort of compensation. That's another end of it.
Is there anything left of value in the tailings that could pay its own way to reprocess?
Well, certainly that's a question that's been asked. And in fact, back in 89, that was tested. The tailings were assayed, especially for their gold content, because they didn't get everything out. And probably, you know, we've got tens of millions of dollars of gold still in those piles. But at current gold prices, it would still cost you much more than that to get it out. But that was the hope, that it would be enough that it could pay the cost of disposing of it properly. But it didn't come close to that, I'm afraid.
I've got another question.
Sure.
You know, the tailings came out of the mine. Was there ever talk of, like, creating a slurry and pumping it back into the tunnels?
Yes, and in fact, they did that. Many of the cavities in the lower part of the mine were backfilled with tailings. They weren't doing it to get rid of the tailings. They were trying to kind of counteract the effects of pressure that might cause those cavities to cave in. But there is a fair chunk of tailings material in the mine. What's left wouldn't fit there. It wouldn't all fit back in, because when you grind it up, you fluff it up. So the volume is much greater now than it would have been as solid rock. But it's been talked about. The feeling was that you couldn't still seal it off enough from water to stop the pollution from being generated, whether it was underground or on the surface.
Question, are there any other sites down a little downriver, a little ways from the tailings, where more artificial wetlands could be developed, or have you already mentioned?
Well, they've been talking about this area kind of upstream from 10 Mile Creek. So, there would be some territory there that they could put larger artificial wetlands in if they needed to. And in fact, Holden was originally thinking of putting their new sewage drain field here, and they didn't do that because of that possibility. So that's certainly been a question.
One other quick question. of those 47 alternatives, or 18, or whatever you meant, 8 alternatives you mentioned, what are the, which ones are the pure environmental ecologists recommending, aside from government, or I don't know how it all mixes that way, but.
Yeah, well, there's certainly those that are advocating for the higher alternatives. And there were 8 main ones, but each one had several subcategories, so in the end, you probably had 2 or 3 dozen true alternatives. And there were a number of people saying we should get those tailings sealed off. They should be covered with some impervious material and sealed around the base, and they shouldn't be allowed to have any contact with the surface environment. But then you're pushing the cost over $100 million in those kinds of choices. Well, there have been some good questions. Thanks for joining this evening. And certainly, if you have other questions about the mine, its history, or what's going on, don't hesitate to ask. I'll be around the next couple days. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.